other side of the building, and there was smoke everywhere and people are jumping out the windows.
Good morning, I'm Linda Mottram with a special edition of AM. On a shocking day for America, the day that the vulnerability of a superpower was fully exposed by four simultaneous terrorist attacks.
Freedom itself was attacked this morning by a faceless coward, and freedom will be defended.
The once towering World Trade Center in New York's financial district is no more. It took two direct hits when two hijacked passenger aircraft were flown into its two towers.
I was just standing here watching the World Trade Center after the first plane hit. I just saw a second plane come in from the south and hit the south tower halfway between the bottom and the top of the tower. It's got to be a terrorist attack. I can't tell you anything more than that. I saw the plane hit the building.
Oh, my goodness. We're looking at a live picture from Washington, and there is smoke pouring out of the Pentagon. It would appear that there has been another major explosion, this one in the nation's capital. There is smoke in the air over the Pentagon, a symbol of the United States power. There is smoke pouring out of the Pentagon. This is coming at 9:43 Eastern Time. The president right now is on his way back from Florida.
The United States will hunt down and punish those responsible for these cowardly acts.
Just excerpts from the report AM ran on that Tuesday morning after Monday night Australia time the news came through that planes had carried out those four terrorist attacks. Linda Mottram was on deck presenting AM. She'll be coming up shortly to present this week, but she joins us on the line. Do you remember scrambling to get into work that morning, Linda?
Well, sort of, Simon. It was a bit weird because the night before, you know, when you present AM, you have to get up pretty early in the morning. So the night before, I was kind of going to bed and I didn't have the TV on. I didn't have the radio. I didn't have any, you know, I wasn't really concentrating on the news. I was trying to clear my mind to sleep. And I had a phone call, and it was a phone call from Nigeria, the Nigerian capital, Abuja. And it was my husband on the line, and he simply said, "Turn on the TV." And I said, "What are you talking about? Why?" He said, "Turn on the TV." So I did. And of course, what I saw was what everybody was watching, pretty much everybody by that point. And the reason my husband was in Abuja, he was there for the BBC and they'd seen this happen in their daytime and they were scrambling to get to anywhere, principally Pakistan. So they had a whole sort of game plan they'd already mapped out around what turned out to be an Al-Qaeda episode, all of this sort of stuff. So I've got this almost future-looking husband speaking in my ear about what this all means. And I'm standing there watching these surreal events on TV from New York and trying, I think like everybody in different circumstances, trying to work out what on earth we were looking at. And then, of course, there was lots of calls. It was a matter of who's going to do what when. And I was told, go to bed. This is going to take, you know, a long time to play out. Come in for your normal shift and we'll do a raft of special programs, which we did. And that set us off on that extraordinary journey around that moment.
As I explained to Robbie and Wendy yesterday on their breakfast show, it was a normal nightlife. I was filling in for Tony Delroy and Peter Crean in the Melbourne Age was doing What the Papers Say. Normally one of those unflappable, just dry, trad print journos. He was distracted and then I had to say, "Peter, what's wrong?" He said, "Well, Simon, we've just had reports of a plane accident in New York." But then kept on doing What the Papers Say. Stopped. He couldn't do it. I said, "Peter, what's happening now?" He said, "Well, we're getting strange reports that there's a second plane accident in exactly the same place." And then 30 seconds later, "Simon, I have to go." And at that stage, we didn't know it was a terrorist attack. Have a listen to this.
And for those people just tuning in, we're on the line with Tony Delroy in Las Vegas. It appears that earlier on the United States is under siege from a series of terrorist attacks with the World Trade Center in New York destroyed and the Pentagon and the State Department in Washington are both in flames. Around about 11:15 our time last night came reports, unsubstantiated at this stage, that a plane had flown into the World Trade Center.
And what was unsubstantiated at that stage was whether it was a terrorist attack. Nobody really knew, but by the time you were taking over the reins, we very much knew that this was an unprecedented level of terrorism, Linda Mottram.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think it's interesting to just remember what we thought at the moment that any of us saw the first of the towers in flames and this talk of an aircraft. And some people had, in the end, there were photos emerged of the first plane going in. But I remember in my own head, the thing I thought was, oh, well, it must be a small aircraft that somehow got out of control and ended up slamming into the side of these massive towers, which, you know, far outstripped the height of anything else in that area in New York. Over the 20 years since, I can't count how many people I have spoken to who had exactly the same initial thought, because you couldn't imagine the notion of a commercial airliner full of people going into the side of one of those buildings. It just seemed too much of an accident. Couldn't possibly happen. But then, of course, it did emerge, especially once that second airliner was flown into the second tower. And just speaking about it is a terrible thing to even be speaking about. But yes, as we went on air with AM the next morning, it was obvious what was going on. And then it became the question of how will America respond? How will the nation respond and pull together around each other? Or will this be divisive? Those sorts of issues, as well as just the sort of sheer trauma of the moment, the extraordinary images, not only of the buildings coming down, but of people struggling to get out from underneath this incredible amount of debris and poisonous debris too. So, you know, it was a really chaotic morning of trying to piece together these bits as they came in over the many hours.
Linda Mottram's with us. She'll be back on the wireless in just under an hour's time with This Week at 8 o'clock. It's interesting because at that time there was a parliamentary or government visit to New York. Then Prime Minister John Howard was there, which meant that we had access to reporters such as Prue Clark, who was on the scene.
I was actually on the street in front of the World Trade Center before they, as they collapsed, I saw it happen, which is probably mostly what I can tell you about at this point. I am still kind of in shock from having seen that and haven't had a lot of time to gather much else information. But I was standing in front of the World Trade Center about a block up after the two planes had crashed into the building. A lot of people were just standing around in shock, a lot of people running away and crying, a lot of people were actually running towards the building as well, screaming, no, no, no. I assume they knew people in there.
That's reporter Prue Clark, who was phoning into me during an extended nightlife that we did right through the morning. And you mentioned that trauma. I think we managed to get a phone call through to the New York Community Hospital and Kathy Seshi.
The emergency services personnel at the World Trade Center have not been able to go back into the building and have not been able, and they do not expect that they will be going back for several hours yet. We know that there are thousands, potentially, of individuals who are trapped in that building. So at the moment at the hospital, we've had a huge influx of patients over the morning hours. It is now actually quite calm here. We are expecting that the most serious injuries have not yet arrived. As you can imagine, it was initially a very chaotic situation and was a massive influx of patients and people and a very high level of activity and many people who were understandably very distraught.
We've had reports that the governor has made available 600 to 1700 special troops to supplement the already emergency services that are working there. Do you think that how long do you think before the situation will be containable from an emergency services point of view?
Unfortunately, I cannot answer that question at all because we have been so focused on our response to the patients that in some ways we are really not able to see the larger picture at this time. All we can do is respond to the patients who are walking through our door. And that's what we're doing to the very best of our ability.
Kathy Seshi from New York Community Hospital that morning as we were covering the 9/11. Linda Mottram's also with me here.
Yeah, Simon, can I just dive in there? I mean, there's a bit of magic around how we get hold of people in these crises. How did you get those calls through?
Well, it was pretty amazing because as a media person, I was amazed. The first thing that fell down was the internet, just got jammed traffic. You couldn't download pages. And then the second thing to fall was the telephone lines. And I was presenting Nightlife, and it was amazing. Tony Delroy had this incredibly loyal listener in the telephone exchange in Melbourne that used to play the quiz with her friend in the Dallas telephone exchange. And they'd be on together with a fixed line doing the quiz each night. Through her generosity and the person in Texas, we were able to keep that phone line alive, and she would place calls through to New York, through to Washington. And so we maintained access on the telephone when the lines were all jammed as well.
That's a great story, Simon. I really love that.
What's coming up in this week?
Well, look, we will have a look at 9/11. We will chat to a reporter named Fred Kaplan, who writes for Slate these days. He at the time was working for the Globe and Mail and was actually at the site of the Twin Towers destruction on that day. But we're really going to try and look at this as a 20-year-old experience. Is the way America sees this thing changing? Is there even a weariness, notwithstanding how, of course, this will always be seared in memories? But we're also going to ask him about how this has changed America's approach to the world and what sorts of things America might have not had its eye on because it was so obsessed with terrorism after this event.
It's funny you say seared in memories, because I don't mean to be rude, but you're my second choice to speak to this morning. My first choice was a very dear friend of ours who was in the Twin Towers at the time of the attack, and he's only ever spoken about it to me twice, but when I rang and asked him would he share his memories, he said that 2 weeks before September 11 every year, the televisions go off in their house because we repeat those images of the planes going into the building. And he said, imagine if you were in a car accident in your teens and every year you're made to watch that car accident where you'd lost friends over and over again. And so I guess we also have to think of those who were in the Twin Towers as well.
Indeed, indeed. Thanks, Simon.
Linda Mottram.